And now, Prophecy Q&A with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and Jimmy DeYoung Jr.
Thank you, Jay Johnson. This is Jimmy DeYoung Jr., and you're listening to Prophecy Q&A Live. Well, we are in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, with our prophecy conference going on, our School of Prophets, and we are studying the book of Daniel, taught by Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, my father, and David James is teaching God's Plan Through the Ages. Great classes. Wish that you were here with us. We're having a good time. On our program this week, we are going to go live to our sessions here in Lancaster, and we're going to actually let the students ask questions of Dr. DeYoung. Usually it's my job to ask those questions that you send in, but we have quite a few students here, and they have questions also. So we are taking this opportunity to kind of let them ask the questions in person as they talk to Dad, and you'll hear his response and his answers as always. We want to tell you also, go to our website, take a look at what's coming up. We have the Weekend Worldview with Brandon House coming up in April. We also have our trip to Israel, both in the spring and in the fall. So we want to bring those to your attention. And now, without further ado, let's go right to the classroom as we hear a student asking the first question of Dr. DeYoung.
Looking at Israel right now, how would you ascertain it as far as the land, the desert shall blossom as a rose? How much blossoming is it happening, or isn't it yet?
Well, indeed, there is some blossoming taking place there in Israel. For example, they say about 65% of all foodstuffs that would be consumed in the European Union come from the agricultural fields of Israel. You go down to the Dead Sea area. Now, they have planted date palms down there. And it looks like just a whole new culture coming into existence down there. You go into the different valleys. The Jezreel Valley, which will be the valley of the Battle of Armageddon, is referred to as the breadbasket of the world. The Hula Valley, they produce something like 7 crops of alfalfa a year. And that's just out of the ordinary that that would happen. Some of them being produced up to 12 crops a year. So it's starting to blossom. But the text that's talking about that in Isaiah is in the context of that period called the kingdom to come. And remember, in our discussion, we talked about the fact that when the Lord comes back in the regeneration, paleogenesia, returning to as it was in Genesis, Genesis again, which is what the two Greek words mean, that he's going to refurbish the earth and it will be the blossoming in the desert of the rose. We take tours twice a year to Israel. And in our fall tour, it's beautiful, but it's more brown. In our spring tour, we drive to the desert and you see the little red poppies that have popped up in the desert. I mean, it is so beautiful at that time. So there is a precursor to the fulfillment of those kingdom promises and the way the land will be, but they are blossoming. Some of them, they've even taken salt water, and they've been able to reduce it and through their operations to make it so that you can use salt water that has to do through desalination to produce crops. And they have some vegetables and some trees that they have worked towards making to be able to sustain life that way. So it's wonderful, beautiful to see.
Transhumanism, how is that setting the stage for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled?
Okay, define for me transhumanism.
I got it from Chuck Missler through his program. It's integrating computer technology with people to actually think and have an artificial limb move or operate a vehicle by that method?
Robotics, basically?
Yes.
Well, you know, I think that if for nothing else, when you look at Revelation chapter 13, it talks about the false prophet, after the Antichrist comes into the temple, goes into the Holy of Holies at the midway point of the tribulation and desecrates the temple, 2 Thessalonians 2:4, the abomination of desolation. It says, then the false prophet will put a statue in the temple and that statue will be able to talk and to move. Now, this is an inanimate object that's going to be moving and talking. And so there's some suggestions as to how that might happen. Ventriloquism may be one way. Robotics would be another to make it move. And indeed, what you've just described, I had never heard the term, but I know Chuck, a pretty good friend of mine, and I know that he's very technical like that, but it seems that that could play a key role, if nothing else, in that particular event that's going to be fulfilled in Bible prophecy.
What is the status of the Sea of Galilee?
The Sea of Galilee, now I'm not sure, the status, are you talking about the Dead Sea? The Dead Sea or the Sea of Galilee?
The Sea of Galilee for the water supply to the population of Israel.
Oh, okay. Well, both of them are in trouble. The Dead Sea is the lowest spot on the face of the earth, about the midway point in the whole nation of Israel. And its water comes from up north Mount Hermon, the melting snows, plus other springs and rivers up there. They all converge on the Jordan River, and the Jordan River then comes down to the Sea of Galilee, and it fills up the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee has an electricity-producing operation there, where much of the electricity, and especially the northern half of Israel, is produced from the Sea of Galilee. And number two, the Sea of Galilee provides upwards of three-fourths of all the water for the people of the nation of Israel. Well, with the lack of rain in the area, and with the lesser snows in Mount Hermon and the other mountain peaks, the Sea of Galilee is down in elevation as well. But then that water coming out of the Sea of Galilee is transported about 97 miles to the Dead Sea, and the water there is just really quickly disappearing through evaporation, number one, but not number two, not enough water coming down from the Sea of Galilee. And what is happening, a lot of the farmers are diverting that water coming from the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea away from the Jordan River to water their fields, and thus the Dead Sea is really drying up. They're in the process of being able to develop a method by which they can refill the Dead Sea. It's called the Red Dead Project. And what they're going to do, and President Shimon Peres, who's the president of the country, is the major player. He has been able to convince the Japanese to finance it. And what it's going to be done is they're going to take a conduit, a pipe, a large pipe, and run it from the Red Sea, which is at sea level at the southern end of Israel, and they will run it to the Dead Sea. And this conduit, of course, the Dead Sea is 1,300 feet below sea level. The Red Sea is at sea level, so the water would go downhill very quickly. They're going to put electric producing plants along that conduit, and they'll bring all of the water into the Dead Sea, and they believe that'll raise the elevation of the Dead Sea. But they're concerned about bringing the water in at the southern end of the Dead Sea because that's where the Dead Sea works are located. That's one of the major money-producing companies in Israel. They extract the minerals, the chemicals, the phosphates out of the Dead Sea. There's enough phosphate in the Dead Sea, and you make fertilizer out of phosphate. Both Jordanians and the Israelis are extracting the phosphate. They say there's enough phosphate in the Dead Sea to fertilize the entire earth for 200 years without it running out. And so that potential of wealth is there. They don't want to mess it up. So they don't want to drop the water from the Red Sea at the southern end of the Dead Sea. They want to move it north, and they'll put another conduit moving it north and drop the water from the Red Sea at the northern end. They're at the northern end. It's 1,300 feet below sea level at the surface, but the bottom of the Dead Sea is another 1,300 feet deep up there. So they will gather the goop off of the northern end of the Dead Sea, put it in a conduit, running it back to the southern end to the Dead Sea works. These two pipes will run in parallel, and they tell me, I'm not an electronic engineer, but they tell me those two pipes running in parallel will develop an electric magnetic field. And what they're hoping to see happen there is out of that electric magnetic field, they can extract all the gold and silver in the Dead Sea. And since the time of the flood, the gold and silver has gone down into the Dead Sea. Remember, Abraham was a very wealthy man with gold and silver. So was Solomon, King Solomon. But there are no gold and silver mines. When you go to Ezekiel chapter 38, I think it's verse 14, it talks about the fact, what? You've come to Israel to take a prey of the gold and silver. It's in the Dead Sea. And they estimate there's enough gold and silver at the price of gold and silver today to pay every national debt in the world. And maybe that may be the prey, the hook in those who are going to come down in that alignment of nations. Another question?
Jimmy, you have Israel. They are all prepared to rebuild the temple. And we know by studying the Bible that the Antichrist is going to desecrate that temple that they're going to rebuild. Why, with the knowledge of that in their minds, why are they making such a big deal about building this when it's going to be destroyed?
Well, first of all, the Orthodox Jewish community who is making preparations to build that temple do not understand Daniel 9:27. They do not understand the desecration, the abomination of desolation. They are building that temple because God commands that they have a temple. And they've not been able to have the sacrificial system. The way they look for salvation today is threefold. They offer prayers three times a day. They give money and they do good deeds. And that's the way they see they can gain their salvation. But they know that really is not truly the way. They have to have a temple so they can offer sacrifices for their sins. But they don't understand all there is to know about the temple. Orthodox Jews study basically the Talmud, which is the commentaries on the scriptures. They don't really study the scriptures themselves. Howbeit, when Jimmy did his production, Ready to Rebuild Revisited, Jimmy interviewed one rabbi named Yoel Karen. Yoel Karen is a rabbi who did say, we've got it on video, we've got it on CD disc as well, he did say, we are going to build the temple following the pattern of Herod's temple. We've got all the information written down by Maimonides, the great Jewish sage, and that is the pattern we're working on now. But ultimately, we will build the temple described in Ezekiel 40-46. That is the first time in 25 years of my relationship with those people building the temple that anybody has ever made that statement. In fact, we have pricked their conscience with, what about Ezekiel 40-46, the description of the temple there? And they would just put it aside, oh, the Messiah will give us the answer to that. Rabbi Yoel Karen made the statement, as was the case when Zerubbabel came back. They put up a very simple wooden building, in fact, in order to be able to start the sacrificial system after they came out of the Babylonian captivity. And so what has been taking place there is that they're preparing to build a temple. They don't recognize it. It's going to be the tribulation temple, but this one rabbi has recognized it, and he's becoming a teacher to these men involved in the preparation to build the temple, and telling them Ezekiel's temple ultimately has to be built. Another question? Yes, Max.
Could you expand on what you were talking about last session about the heavens today, tomorrow, and so on, and provide some more scripture on that?
When you look at the heavens today, you have to, there's a window into the third heaven today. It's Revelation chapters 4 and 5. And when you look in there, you see that God the Father is seated on the throne. And you go to chapter 5 and verse 1, he has a sealed book in his hand. And that's the title deed to the earth. He's going to give that to Jesus Christ in order to use those judgments to bring the earth and earth dwellers under submission. And so we see, if you read chapter 5, I think it's verses 7 or 8, something like that, Jesus Christ, the tribe of Judah, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, he will come over, take out of the hand of the Father who's seated on the throne. So Christ is not on the throne today. So when you look into heaven through the window provided by the scriptures, that's where you see. Also in chapter 4, we see four creatures. They, and I would call them by lack of no other name, I would call them the throne room angels. They are angels. They're not seraphim from Isaiah 6. They're not cherubim from Ezekiel 1. They are different in description and responsibility, and I would call them the throne room angels. They sing holy, 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 24/7, around the clock, always speaking holy, holy, holy. That's the glimpse into the heavens today. We also know what's happening in the heavens is that, and I'm talking about, there's three heavens, the third heaven. Paul said, I knew a man 14 years ago who went to the third heaven, 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 2. I think Paul was possibly talking about himself, but whoever it was, he went to the third heaven. That means there's three heavens. In the first and second heaven, you have evil angelic creatures, and they are going to be playing a key role, and get more to that when we look at Daniel chapter 10. Then also in the heavens, we get married to Jesus Christ. We go through the judgment seat of Christ in the heavens. That's 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10, Romans chapter 14 and verse 10. We have an opportunity to stand before Jesus Christ to receive reward for the works we've done in His power and for His glory, or suffer loss for the works we did in our power for our glory. That all takes place in the heavens. And then in response to the Lord's Prayer, Matthew chapter 6, Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Heaven moves when Christ comes back to the earth. He moves to the earth and His kingdom is set up. Jesus Christ gets that kingdom from the Ancient of Days, God the Father, Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. God the Father then goes to the New Jerusalem, which will be hanging in the heavenlies, and there, chapter 21, verse 22 says that's where God and Jesus will be located. No temple there, but will be a temple on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and it'll be there forever, book of Ezekiel, chapter 37, verses 26 and 28. And so heaven tomorrow is going to be on earth. The Lord refurbishes it, makes it a beautiful place, as it was at the time that He created all of the earth. That's Matthew chapter 19, verse 28. And we live out that period of time in the millennial kingdom. Then this old earth is destroyed. Even the refurbished earth that Jesus has made beautiful for us, as it was at the time of His creation, it'll be destroyed because it's been cursed, because Satan has been around this area. And so it's, and the new earth, excuse me, the heavens and the earth will be destroyed. Then we'll have new heavens and new earth. And new heavens and new earth described over first time in Isaiah 65 and in Isaiah 66, where He says, I will create new heavens. The word bara is create in Hebrew, same word used in Genesis 1. And then in, of course, Revelation 21 and 22, a description of the new heavens and the new earth. And the heavens forever, where are we going to be? We're not going to the third heaven for eternity. We're going to be in the New Jerusalem, all believers in the New Jerusalem with God and Jesus, because that's where they are. Revelation 21, verse 22. By the way, did you notice something? I did not give my opinion there. I simply gave you scripture. And that's key. A lot of guys writing on heaven, they're giving a lot of opinion, which is worth zero. Read the book that has all the information about heaven.
Now, how about Ezekiel's temple that remains forever? How's that related to the new heaven and new earth?
Well, Ezekiel's temple that we're in forever in Ezekiel chapters 40 to 46, that will be the temple that's on the scene at the time of the millennial kingdom. And then that will be the temple that will be moved into eternity future as well, and it will be lifted up somehow. Somebody said, how could the Lord lift up the temple from the old earth and put it on the new earth? Hey, folks, if He's going to create the new earth, I think the temple being put over there is a piece of cake. You know, He can do that very simply.
Had a question on who might be saved out of the tribulation period, specifically those who may have heard the gospel prior to that, to the rapture. Can they be saved out of the tribulation period?
Okay, his question needs to be dealt with from the scriptures found in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 8 and following, where it says, those who have rejected the love of the truth that they might be saved, God shall send them a strong delusion so that they believe the lie. Now, there's three steps, and rejection would be one of them, that must lead up to that. First of all, you've got to hear the gospel in order to be able to reject it. Secondly, you've got to understand it in order to be able to reject it. And then the third step is you have to reject it. So if you've heard it, understood it, and rejected it before the rapture of the church, those who have rejected the love of the truth that they might be saved, God shall send them a strong delusion. Now, in the context of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, we're talking about the rapture of the church and what would happen. And so that's making a statement. There is no second chance for anybody who rejects salvation at the time before the rapture of the church. No second chance. But will there be people saved in the tribulation? Numbers that no man could even count. It says in Revelation chapter 11, verses 3 and following, there will be two witnesses that will preach for 3.5 years, 1,260 days, on the Temple Mount in the city of Jerusalem. They'll do that preaching. Their first results will be 144,000 male virgin Jews, chapter 7, verses 4 to 8, 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes of Israel, and their virgin, chapter 14 and verse 4, because they were going to have the responsibility of preaching the gospel of the kingdom to the entire world, Matthew 24, 14. Now, that Matthew 24, 14 passage is not dealing with today. Not everybody in the world has to hear before the rapture, but everybody after the rapture has to hear before the second coming of Christ. And that's why those 144,000 male virgin Jews are out there as virgins. They won't have time for a wife. They won't have time for a family. They got to get the gospel of the kingdom to everybody. 7 billion people on the earth today, they have to get it out there. Chapter 7 and verse 9 then says there will be a multitude saved that no man could number. We don't know how many. But if they've never heard it, understood it, and rejected the gospel, then they can be saved in the tribulation period.
I had a question about why we have a new earth. You kind of said something about, well, the temple is going to come from heaven and come down to earth. I'm just confused. If we got a new Jerusalem and it's hovering over here, and why are we going to have an earth?
The reason we're going to have a new earth is because of the fact that the Lord in the Abrahamic covenant, Genesis 15, and the land covenant, Deuteronomy chapter 30, says that he's going to give a piece of real estate to the Jewish people forever. Not just during the millennial kingdom, forever. And in order for him to keep that promise forever, the word there in Hebrew is olam, O-L-A-M. It's the same name with the name of God. El olam, El God, olam, eternality. The eternality of God in the character of God found in the name El olam. You take olam away, and then that has to apply forever, eternality of this issue we're dealing with. So the new earth is going to be a forever earth. And the temple has to be on that earth forever. Ezekiel chapter 37 again, verses 26 and 28. I will have my sanctuary among my people forever. All the covenants are forever covenants fulfilled in the kingdom, but applicable throughout eternity future. And so the Jews have a piece of real estate. They have to have an earth to have that piece of real estate on, and that will take them into eternity future.
Jimmy, it's a question with two parts. First, do you believe Psalm 83 is prophetic? And if you do, where would you place that, and how will that come into play in the end of times?
I do believe Psalm 83 is prophetic, and I place it at the first 6 months of the tribulation period. It's a parallel passage with Ezekiel chapter 38 and Daniel chapter 11, verses 40 to 45. Now, I won't go too much in it because of our teaching session on Daniel 11 yet to come. But we do know that that's going to happen in the first 6 months of the tribulation period. And I believe Psalm 83, Ezekiel 38, Daniel 11 are all of the same period of time. Well, Jim, it's been great to be able to be here at our School of Prophets conference in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. We're going to do this on an annual basis, and we've had friends come from all over the countryside to study in the modules that we have presented. David James has presented a module on God's plan through the ages, and I've had the privilege of teaching the book of Daniel. It's been a very special time. This is not a conference to bring thousands of people in to hear the prophetic word, but for serious students of Bible prophecy, this has been a special time. And I hope and pray that there may be others who hear the broadcast, Prophecy Q&A Live today, and will maybe want to know more about this School of Prophets. You can go to our website and you can see how this conference was laid out. That's prophecytoday.com. Or you can find out information later on our website, the same location, about the conference next year. There is a conference coming up in September in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I'll be teaching the book of Ezekiel at that time. So this will be another. We're going to try to do these regionally across the United States. And we're so honored to be able to gather a group of serious students of Bible prophecy, pastors, teachers, those who just want to know what Bible prophecy is all talking about. This has been a very special time for us here in Lancaster, and I hope and pray that you might come and join us next time we're together.
Thanks, Dad. This has been a special Q&A session, and we really enjoyed and appreciate all those that asked the questions at our conference. We invite you to join with us next September in Gatlinburg, and again next spring here. Our dates will be in March. Here in Lancaster, why not make plans now to be with us at either one of those two dates? Great time of studying. I know that in Gatlinburg in September, we will be studying the book of Ezekiel. Dad will be teaching that, and we'll be adding the other courses later on. We'll fill you in and give you the necessary info for you to make your plans to be with us and join us in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Well, folks, again, thank you for joining us. There's nothing left for me to say except let's keep looking up until...